Welcome to Beacon of Light, a show that examines and explores the unexplained and the curious. Join Marcus Leder and Jennifer Fallah on a journey of discovery as they shed some light on a variety of spiritual, paranormal, and psychological topics. Jennifer and I will be discussing the things we all see from time to time out of the corner of our eyes, that sudden movement, usually shadowed, that vanishes once we turn our heads and face directly with our eyes. What is this strange visual phenomenon, and why is it only visible in our peripheral vision? While I do have my own theories based on my years of research as an explorer and researcher of paranormal anomalies, I wanted to go into meditation and meet with an angelic being to pose the question directly and see what information I could bring back. Jennifer did the same thing, and tonight we will learn a little more about the silent, fast-moving images around us. Before I get into my meditation, I'd like to welcome Jennifer to the show. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
And I guess you, we haven't really shared the meditations, but I guess you went in and saw someone different than me. So we'll have kind of a variety of information.
I did, But
I'll go ahead and get into what I found, and then you can tell us a little bit about what you experienced and what you were told, and then we can discuss, you know, the topic a little bit, because I know we both have experiences with it. I think most people do.
And for those that are just joining us for the first time, can you shortly explain what technique we use, the interdimensional meditation,
real quick? We use a technique. We do it differently, but we use a technique to alter our consciousness in a meditative process. And, you know, we call it interdimensional meditation, basically because we are moving our awareness through different levels from the physical plane on up into different levels of existence, and we generally go up into the mental or heaven worlds, specifically the sixth level is where both of us usually end up. And in this frequency of consciousness, this level of awareness, we are able to interact with the different beings there. Usually, I interact with other types of beings, but usually they're angels or archangels. And we can speak with them and pose questions and learn. And in that place, everything we do or think is actual reality. We can create using just thought, and that's part of the physical properties of that dimension. But this is where we go to, and this is what we did in, you know, for this show as well. And we went into interdimensional meditation. I use a process that uses hemisync technology from the Monroe Institute, and Jennifer is just naturally adept at it. It's something that she was either born with or developed over her lifetime. And you know, which sometimes I can get a little more detail because of the control factor that I'm going in with, but she usually, you know, it's more of a rounded experience when she goes in and brings back a lot of the details that I tend to miss. So that's what we do. And in this case, we went in to find out about the shadow movements that we see in the corner of our eyes when we walk in a room, and all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting there looking one way and you see something you think it's a small animal or something, and you turn your head to look, and there's nothing there. And so I went in, and I reached that level, and I met with Michael in the Arena of Clarity, which Jennifer constructed a while back out of, like I said, out of pure intention. You can create with thought. And it's a place of clarity where I think what it does is it helps us focus our awareness, because your awareness can bounce back and forth in different dimensions. And this place was designed, you know, to focus and hold the awareness. And so we usually get more details, or things even look clearer. And I went in and I met with Michael in the arena and asked him about these questions. He told me that these visions happen to most humans, some more than others. He said that they are real. It's not an illusion or anything that we see out of the corner of our eye, and it's just, you know, something that, you know, a trick of the light or anything. It's not that type of thing. They are real and can be anything from the levels directly above, you know, our physical world, which is like the etheric and the astral and the heaven world, or it can be even below our world, because there are dimensions below our world. And there are some entities in those dimensions that aren't real nice either. He said they are sometimes just elemental creatures passing through, and sometimes they could be watching us out of curiosity, observing our world, you know, for no real reason. I asked him if they could harm us, and he said most are not even aware, you know, of us, not aware that we're even here, and they're just on a path going somewhere. And we just happened to catch him because conditions are just right. He continued saying that there are entities in the physical that can absorb your energy. That's your personal life force. But the only way that can happen is if you panic and allow fear to enter your awareness. When you generate fear, it opens up your energetic pores, and energy starts to leak away from your, they call it the egg-shaped aura. That's kind of like a cocoon that we carry around with us, and there are pores that open up in it, and the entities will actually come around and absorb the energy that we're giving off, almost like when someone's cold and they get next to somebody to take their heat. I ask him why we cannot see them directly with our eyes. And he said that peripheral vision in humans is an evolutionary survival ability that goes way back to primitive man. Those that could see objects move with their peripheral vision survived more than those that could not. And in turn, they passed this ability through their genetics to the offspring, who became even better at peripheral sight, and so on to the present day. He said that the perception at the sides of the retina of the eye were not evolved, that the eyes were not evolved to see detail or see a lot of actual color. You mainly see black and white or the low frequencies of red. They see only movement, and that's because if, you know, if there was some lion, you know, charging you and you were sitting drinking water, you'd be able to see it coming from the side, and that's how evolution works. But that developed, you know, in people, and we still have it to this day for that reason. He said that it's a natural cloak that some entities have learned to use in the world of humans. But occasionally, he said, they will encounter a person who can hold the peripheral vision and bring it in, and bring it into direct sight, making the entity or spirit visible. And when the entity realizes this, that they've been spotted, they instinctively go into a panic, trying to get away and back into the stealth mode. And You know, I have talked to people who have seen entities like this, who saw the movements and looked, and they saw the entity still. It was like a shadow of a person, and that shadow, you know, started like going into panic mode, where it would try to get away, hide behind things, and take off running. And in one, I don't want to get too far off the topic, but one case like that, the entity actually turned to run, and the person was looking, and they could hear branches breaking, like it had actual solid mass. You know, those we call those shadow people. But some people have the ability to hold the awareness in the retina on the side of the eyeball on the inside. They can swing it around and hold it in front of them. I can't do that, but I know other people who claim they've been able to do that, and that's what he was talking about with these individuals. He said that we have before us a whole observable world in the range of our peripheral vision if we learn to pay attention to it and trust it. You know, don't write it off as just, you know, something you saw and there's nothing there. He said that Eugen would have a few more details about this and about the nature of the entities in our view. So I took it as a hint and I thanked them in return. In this meditation, he confirmed some of my theories and added some missing information that I had not yet considered. And that is one of the great things about this, you know, when we talk to entities that are far evolved above us, like angels, in this kind of meditation, not only do we learn new things, but it helps to fill in any blanks that that I've encountered over the years. And that's pretty much what I got from that meditation. I have more information and experiences and things like that, but I'm going to bring Jennifer in and let her share what she got.
Yeah, and you all just have to bear with me a little bit. I've got that back to school cold. But I did get similar information. I went in, and this time, just instead of meeting with just one archangel, I met with Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel.
Whoa, the whole team.
All together. And Uriel was really the only one that did a lot of talking. But I it was kind of hard when I was there because I really feel like there was a lot of transfer of knowledge. You know, there wasn't so much a lot of lips moving. So I really don't. I think most of the information came from Uriel. What he said was that we perceive spirit out of the corners, top, and bottom of the eye because of the physical makeup of the eye and the way the brain processes information. He did not get into the physical makeup of the eyes, but did elaborate on the way the brain processes information. He said, when we view our surroundings, the scene in front of you gets your first attention. Your peripheral vision is your second attention. Your second attention is viewing and processing information as simply as, and what he said was, what is. And what I got from that was that this term, what is, that he used was more like face value. It's there. Whatever's moving, you know, basically ability we have to help guide us so we don't run into things, to see danger coming. You're just processing movement and what is actually there out of the corners, top and bottom of your eyes. Excuse me. He said when you view something directly, it immediately triggers the brain's process of reasoning. when you view something with your peripheral vision, it does not receive as much attention from the brain and is viewed simply as what is or at face value. So what you're focusing on, usually we're focusing on something else at all times. And the peripheral vision is just in place to keep us safe. So when we see something out of the corner of our eye, it usually takes us by surprise. That was not what we were focusing on. That was not what most of your brain activity is focused on and processing. He said, once the sighting shifts your attention to your first attention, the brain takes over telling you things like, you know, what was that? I couldn't have seen that, or I didn't see that, or that's not possible, or that must have been my imagination. Your brain starts going through everything that it knows to be true when you shift your attention over to that area where you saw something out of the corner of your eye. So now you no longer see it, because there are physical components in your eye all the way around the edge that can perceive this kind of movement, this kind of what is, this basic, it's like Marcus said, a basic human instinct to detect something coming towards you or around you. And I don't know what those physical components of the eye are called. But he basically explained it to me like that. And he said, once the brain tries to make sense of it, the scene is filtered by what you believe to be possible or what you believe to be acceptable. And depending on your beliefs, and most of us believe that we're not supposed to be seeing these kinds of things, then you stop seeing it when you shift your first attention. So the best thing to be, if you're seeing something out of the corner of your eye on a regular basis, I would just not immediately turn. Just be aware that it's there and keep looking at what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And just try not to focus that first attention on it, but see if you can see any details of it. He said that spirits, guides, angels, earthbound spirits, animals, and others have been noticed by humans through the second attention. He said that animals come and spend a lot of time, or spend time with humans a lot, especially if they've recently passed. When we see that something out of the corner of our eye, please don't jump to conclusions and always think, oh, this is something bad. It was black or it was brown. Because a lot of times, that's just your physical perception of the movement or what was there. And it's not always something dark. It could be a visiting loved one. It could be your guide. It could be an angel. It could be a dog that you loved. It could be anything. We have all of these things around us much more than you even think we do.
Yeah, you would not believe how many, you know, people think they're alone, you know, and it doesn't mean, like she said, it doesn't mean anything that bad is there, but we are never alone, you know, when we talk about dimensions, because you can be in an empty room and it can actually be full.
Yes. Yeah.
As you have seen before.
Yeah, he said that I mentioned that most of the time when I see things around the house, a lot of my sightings, it seemed like a cat. You know, different colored cats or, you know, animals, you know, and the kids too. And it's like, okay, why are we always seeing animals? You know? We think the cat came into the room, and I turn around, and the cat's like, all right, where's the cat? Okay, well, the cat's downstairs sleeping on the bed. It was not just in the room, but that was a pretty strong, out of the corner of my eye sighting. You know, it was my, you know. And I asked, why do animals come around? You know, I mean, what? And he said, animals only live one life on Earth and form love and attachment to their caregivers. And they do not experience the negative emotions of missing someone, like the suffering of missing someone when they go home. But they do crave being in their home and around the people they love. And they have the ability to come and visit, just like humans do. They also come to provide protection. And I asked him, I'm like, well, what's a cat going to do? You know, my cats were all big pillows. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to chase away. And he said that they, in spirit form, can provide more protection than we are aware of, even a cat. So, and then I did ask about the earthbound spirits and negative entities. And he said they are usually perceived as dark shadow figures. That is true. But not all shadow figures are negative. It's important to take note of the way that you feel when experiencing these encounters. How did you feel at the exact moment that you saw it? If you didn't feel threatened or frightened or like, I got to get out of here right now, there's a good chance that it was not a negative entity. It was just, you know, it could be, and not all earthbound spirits are bad either. You know, and it could be just somebody hanging out or somebody in the vicinity or somebody watching over you. We have all of these human instincts that go far beyond our physical senses. And that includes the whole peripheral vision and the feelings and gut feelings. And you really have to listen to how you feel when you have one of these sightings. You know, fear usually comes after the fact when you process. If you walk into a room and it feels, you feel like you got to get out of there right now. It feels dense. It feels scary. You feel threatened. You should probably get out of there right now.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good idea. Bad in there.
Uh-huh. But most, you know, most of the sightings that I've had are just, you know, I'm doing the dishes or I'm doing something else. And all of a sudden I see something walk across the room or a cat run up the stairs or, you know, a pair of legs walk by or a lady in a gypsy looking dress. That was a neat one. I'll tell you that after the break. But or I think one of the kids walked into the room and I look up to talk to them and they're not there.
Yeah, that's, you know, freaky.
It's things like that, but I was in no way scared. There was no fear associated with the situation until afterwards when I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, should I be afraid of this? Or, you know, what do we got going on here?
Yeah. So that just interrupt you for a second. That's something that, you know, my shamanic teacher, Carlos, that's something he would keep, you know, pounding in my head. So it seems like every time I saw him, he told me to listen with my body. And, you know, after the first few times, you know, I thought he was nuts. But what it turns out is he's telling me to listen to my body, the feelings, because the body is the feelings, you know, your emotions. And that's why they're associated, love is with the heart and different things. He said to use your body, listen to your body, and pay attention to it. If something bad is around you, your body is going to tell you. But if you have some type of, like Jennifer just said, if you have some type of entity in the room, you see something and you don't feel threatened or scared or anything, then that's what you need to pay attention to, because it's probably, you know, something that's not going to do you harm, or could be a loved one, or it's hard to say, but that's something that's been stressed in the Toltec lineage for centuries now, is that you can tell those things by listening to the way you feel. You don't actually listen, you just pay attention to the way you feel, the way your body feels. You know, does it want to throw up and run, or, you know, is it just, you know, calm?
Yeah, your intuitive senses, everyone has them. You know, some listen and develop theirs more than others. But it's all part of your defense mechanisms to help you get through this life. And, you know, like for me, I've been told by the angels that if I wanted to, I could see the spirits and the angels just with my physical eyes, just straight on. And I'm like, okay, you know, that'd be cool. But I know I'm not ready for that, because, or it would have happened. And we all build up these walls. This is okay and this is not okay. And I will accept this and I will accept that. And this is possible. That's not possible. We all do that. And, you know, when I was, I spent my teenage years in a haunted house, and it was everything I could do just to be normal and not see things. We had, you know, just stuff going on all over the place, you know, and it was not a good feeling in the house, but I had to live there. And so I pretty much would shut. I did not want to see anything. And I think I shut everything down for that. And right now, when I see the angels, I see them in my mind's eye very strong. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference now, whether I'm seeing them with my eyes or not. I mean, you know, you can basically tell, but it's so strong now that it's kind of, you know, I know that I could if I just finally somewhere inside of me accepted it and said, okay, I'm ready now. And then I'd probably pass out dead. I'd probably just pass out. It'd probably scare me. And I don't know why. I'm seeing them all the time in my, with my mind's eye, you know. But we all do that. And in the peripheral vision, there's not, I don't think it has that many limitations, you know, at our first focus and our first attention. That's where we've got all the power. That's where we've got all the yeses and the nos, and this is what I'll accept, and this one, this is, you know, this is beautiful and this is not beautiful, and we have it all programmed in. But the peripheral vision is basically a survival instinct. Something's coming at me. You know, I detect something, I saw movement, you know, what's going on. And so basically that is why so many people are seeing things out of the corner of their eye. Marcus and I have quite a few experiences we would like to share with you. And we're going to get to that right after this short break.
Do you have children who suffer from night terrors or reoccurring nightmares? Have you ever wished there was a way to fight these problems from within? The Wishflower Field series of children's novels is changing the way we empower children by planting seeds of hope, light, and inner strength through fanciful fiction. Jennifer Falla has found a way to speak to children that helps them use their inner light to conquer their fears, believe in themselves, and move forward with a positive attitude. This series is a pioneer that rises above the sea of negative children's fiction to stand alone in a crossover category best described as positive, empowering fiction. Choose a series for your children that not only entertains, but nourishes the spirit. Visit thewishflowerfield.com for your copy today.
Sacred Soils offers rare, sacred treasures from our magical world, along with cutting-edge energy products and tools for empowering your body, mind, and spirit. We invite you to join our world by visiting the website at www.sacredsoils.com and signing up for the newsletter that offers information you will not find elsewhere. So join Marcus Leader at Sacred Soils and tell him Nightwatch sent you. That's www.sacredsoils.com.
Visit our website, beaconoflightradio.org, to hear shows that you missed on the archive page, find links to our Facebook page, and to schedule a reading. We are now offering meditation reading services to the public, just like we perform on the show. If you are in need of guidance from angels or spirit, or have a negative entity lurking around, schedule a service with Jennifer at www.beaconoflightradio.org. Welcome back from the break. Before the break, we were talking about the things that you see out of the corner of your eye, the movements, and we went into our meditations, you know, where we spoke to angels and then we relayed some of our personal experiences, and we're going to go into that a little bit more. But one thing I want to clear up first, most people, I think, know what peripheral vision is, but just, you know, they may not know, you know, how to tell the limits of their vision, because it's not the same with all people. And generally, it's the ability to look straight forward and see 180 degrees. That means to see to both sides of you. You can't focus on anything, but you can see that something is there, and if something moves, you can see it. That's your peripheral vision. People
also above and below too.
Yeah, that's true. It's really, we think of it side to side, but it is above and below as well. We can see more side to side because, you know, our facial features don't get in the way, like our foreheads and hair and stuff like that. But the the ability to see that way, you know, we would have a lot of problems without it. First of all, we wouldn't see things coming at us if something goes to fall on us or someone moves. Also, people who don't have peripheral vision, or it's very poor, and it's very narrow is what it is, and they make very bad drivers, because try to imagine a car if you can only see straight ahead of you, or try to imagine driving. But the way you can measure your peripheral vision is to, you know, hold your arms out in front of you at arm's length, and hold up your index fingers, and then start moving them to the sides, and just keep watching. You have to keep your eyes straight ahead, and don't move your eyes, and just keep moving it until your fingers disappear. When you can no longer see it, that's the limits of your peripheral vision. Most people, it's right on the sides. Now, mine, for some reason, is about 210 degrees. You know, I can literally see a little bit behind me, you know, off to the sides, not directly, but that's I never really paid much attention to it, because that's the way, it's not something you develop, it's just the construct of the eye, and it's like I'm doing that right now, and my arms are actually behind me, and I can still see my fingertips. But
yeah, I got just a little bit past my shoulders, I think. I'm trying it right now, because that's kind of cool. I never thought about it.
Yeah, we probably have everybody listening doing that too right now.
Yeah.
But that's how you test the limitations, you know, of your, you know, the boundaries of your peripheral vision. And that vision is, like I said earlier, it's something that humans evolved with. And it's through natural selection is what it's called in evolution. The primitive man, you know, would be in the jungle or whatever. And the ones that could see something coming from the sides and ran are the ones that survived and passed that genetic trait on. And it's something that just evolved. It wasn't necessarily planned. But that's what peripheral vision is, and the reason we have it is because there are two types of cells, sensory cells, in the retina of the eye, in the inside of the eye, and they are called rods and cones, and they're called rods and cones because they look like rods and they look like cones, and unless I got it backwards, the rods, I believe, are capable of seeing black and white. And the cones can see all the, you know, the visible spectrum of color that humans can see. And the cones are concentrated toward the back of the eye. So, you know, we can see color very well. But there are still cones along the sides of the eyes. And that's why we can still see color in our peripheral vision, but not as well. There are far more rods, sensory cells on the sides of the eyes, and the up and the bottom and top and everything all around, there are higher concentration of rods, which allow us, that's what allows us to see in the dark more and to see motion from the sides. And that's...
Oh, I just had an interesting thought.
Did okay. you now? Was yeah. it related to this?
No. Yes, it okay. is. Yes, it is.
Go ahead.
Okay. So if that's true, that we can see more spirit activity through the sides of our eyes, mm-hmm. because we're running on instinct. Two, because we have these cones, rods.
Rods, yes.
And you mentioned seeing in the dark, and I thought about animals who can see in the dark.
Yeah.
And if everybody who's had any kind of activity going on in their house, any spiritual visits, anything, everybody knows the animals can see them, okay? I have watched my animals do strange things, interact with things that aren't there. They can see in the dark.
That's right.
I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
Yes, it does. The animals actually have a different makeup in the eye, but the cells are similar, and they have a high concentration of rods in their eyes, the stuff that sees black and white. That's why they, you know, dogs can, you know, for example, people say they can't see color. I think they can to a certain extent, but it's like us. It's a paler shade of color than we see, but they can see extremely well in the dark, and so can a lot of predatory animals. The more predatory they are, night hunters are the ones that have a high concentration of these cones, and they can actually see into the infrared spectrum, you know, because of it. And so, yeah, that's why they can see these things more than we can.
And if that's true, maybe people who can physically see spirits and physically see these things with their physical eyes, most of us who can see spirits and things like that, it's a very, very strong mind's eye thing going on. And sometimes it gets so strong it's kind of hard to know the difference. But, you know, it's not – you're still kind of aware that, okay, I'm not really seeing this with my physical eye because I – you know, maybe those people who can, just like from birth, can see spirits with their physical eyes, maybe they have a higher concentration of rods or cones or whatever it is in their eyes than other people.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that very well could be. I've never heard of any studies, you know, in the scientific community, you know, about that, other than why animals can see in the dark. But it's a fact that, you know, there's been thousands and thousands of reports of people's animals who sit there and look at walls and freak out or bark, and, you know, that's pretty common. And
I tell you what. I mean, one night, I'm sorry, but I got to tell you this. One night years ago, I don't know, maybe 3-4 years ago, I was laying diagonally on my bed, and I was feeling kind of sad. I was still going through the mourning process of my husband passed away. I felt my black cat was sitting in front of me, and this black cat, you know, he's not a pick-me-up-and-hold-me kind of cat, but he just always wanted to be next to me. So he just sat there in front of me and just stared at me. And so I'm laying on my side, diagonal on the bed. And he's staring at me, and I'm staring at him, peaceful moment. And I feel something touch the back of my head. It was almost like an electricity kind of static feeling where the hair raises a little bit. And then I just kind of went, like, I froze. And the cat looked slowly up behind me. And this is like the quietest cat on earth. Okay, it looks slowly up behind me. His eyes, pupils get really, really big. And then he goes, shh, and freaks out, runs out of the room. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm not turning around. I'm not turning around. What's behind me? And I didn't even look. I didn't even look because I just gently got up and left the room. But that cat saw something. There's no way. This was the most peaceful cat in the world. Very timid. But if there's a bug on the wall or something like that, the cat would look and follow it with its eyes. But it's not going to hiss and run away like something's going to get it.
Yeah. No, you had something over your shoulder.
Yeah, that freaked me out.
Yeah, it's hard to... I've never had an animal do that, but I've had situations I've been in when I could feel something right behind me looking at me, and it's hard to turn around. You know, sometimes I just went, there's only one case when I actually turned around, I'll be honest. I had enough nerve to turn around. It's because I was standing in front of a wall. I couldn't go anywhere, and there was something there, and that's quite frightening. So it's kind of human instinct not to turn around. It's a battle with your curiosity and fear.
Yeah, but I think most people fear comes after the fact in processing the information, like, what was that? What's in my house? Oh, my gosh, what if it's something bad? You know, and we freak ourselves out.
Yeah, but we have two levels of awareness. We have instinct, and then we have the reasoning. And the reasoning is what you're talking about. That comes later. Instinct, you know, it's an act or perish type, you know, awareness. So it's very ancient. And usually people tend to either fight or run.
Most people don't have a whole lot of negative things coming after them. Most people, it's just... they may think their house is haunted, but it could just be Grandpa coming in for a visit.
I doubt if there was anything bad behind you. It could be been a number of things. You were in an emotional state that, you know, something or someone could have come in to comfort you.
I really think that it was my husband Bill, because
more than likely,
the cat didn't really like him. But that it was just. Because it wasn't, the cat looked up slowly, and then it was just the freakiest thing. And then I saw his pupils grow, and he locked on to whatever he was looking at, and then there was a pause, and then he hissed. So whatever it was taking form, and he probably looked at the cat and said, "Oh, hi, Mikey." You know, the cat went, "Ah!"
Yeah, that's interesting theory, though, about animals that you had with the makeup of the inside of their eyes. You know, that would help them not only see in the dark, it would help them see, see other energy systems like that. It's like, you know, something a lot of people don't know, but, I have a lot of my family is German, and Hitler would, you know, two of my uncles were SS officers for Hitler, and they're my great uncles, I guess. I never met them. But Hitler was taking a lot of people, and this sounds like it's way off topic, but it's actually not. He was taking a lot of people and bringing them into his special group. And the reason he was doing it, one of the characteristics he looked for were blue-eyed Germans. And blue-eyed Germans have a different eye makeup on the inside than normal people do. And I don't know if they have more rods like we're talking about or what it is, but it's a scientific fact that blue-eyed German, and both my uncles were blue-eyed, you know, 7-foot-tall Germans. But they're able to perceive other spectrums, other energies. And both my uncles, from what I understand from my grandmother, they could see in the dark, and I mean see in the dark with no light. They had the ability to see infrared light. Their range went down is because of the makeup of their eyes. And the only people that have been known to be able to do that, you know, in any large groups is blue-eyed Germans. Not brown-eyed Germans. It's got to be blue.
That's interesting because I have, you know, I'm half German and I have blue eyes, but I don't really have very good vision, tell you what. You know, I've had glasses since I was 6 years old. I've always had problems with my vision. So when I see things, you know, I used to see when people would stand next to a solid, like, white wall or something in class, I'd see all this white light around them, which is a little bit lighter than the background. And, you know, when they'd move, it would move with them and it would blend with others. So I figured, well, you know, your eyes are just really bad.
Now you're seeing energy fields. You're seeing.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until recently. But I have noticed something about people with blue eyes. My daughter has hazel eyes. But me and Katie have really light blue eyes. When we get outside in the sun, it makes us sneeze. Okay, this is my theory here. Okay?
Ouch.
It makes my mother sneeze, my father sneeze. They have both blue eyes. Doesn't make my brother sneeze. He has brown eyes.
Huh.
And it never made my Nana sneeze. She had green eyes. And so I'm thinking, there's something about the blue eyes that are a little more sensitive. There's something in them. That makes it more sensitive to light. Also, the people with blue eyes in my family, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it, they also get migraine headaches. And then, and have, we call them blind smells. It's the blind spells. It's the auras, the flashing lights, things like that. So that would be an interesting study.
Yeah, it would.
To find out the differences in the colors of the eyes and if one is more sensitive than the other.
Yeah, theoretically, you know, that's possible. If you have a higher sensitivity to energy, to light in your eyes, that can, you know, it's almost like a short circuit. It sends, you know, too much energy, and it could go into the different, you know, senses that you have, like the sense of smell and all that, and the nose and the thing, the mechanism that makes you sneeze. Could be like an overflow of energy from your eyes. So there's, you know, that's just a theory I'm throwing out.
But I do know that my daughter, my oldest daughter, Faith, she has hazel eyes. She's got almost like every color in there. And they're beautiful. But she can physically see the spirits with her physical eyes. And I wonder, it would be neat if somebody would do a study who was knowledgeable enough on psychic people and the different colored eyes, you know, what abilities,
that would be interesting.
See if there are any similarities with abilities and ability to see auras or spirits or whatever. That would be a very interesting study.
Yeah, and I've studied different things, you know, because I've studied parapsychology forever, and that's what a lot of the universities do, is they make studies, but I've never heard of one like that. Duke University is one of the ones that do quite a bit of research in that area, and the Ryan Institute, but I've never heard of any type of correlation between a study of eyes and psychic abilities, but that needs to be done.
Yeah, that would be cool. I just want to go over, just for those who are listening, maybe to ease some of the minds about sightings in the home.
Yeah.
Just to share a few experiences real quick. We only have a few minutes left. But I have seen everything from animals to a girl that looks about the same age as a 12-year-old, blonde hair, coming in and out of the room. Interestingly enough, I know this house is not haunted. Because she was not always here. We started seeing her a few years ago, and then long periods of time will pass, and you don't see anything. But one night I'm making dinner, and I've got this island where I'm facing the living room and the stairs downstairs to the girls' bedroom, so I can hear them down there. So I see someone, I'm cooking, looking down, and I can see somebody come up the stairs and start to walk a few steps towards me. And so I see blonde hair, but the interesting thing after I thought about it is what I saw was almost like gypsy clothing, all these different colors, long flowing dress, you know? And I think my first thought was, you know, one of the girls was playing dress up, you know? So anyway, I'm cooking and I look up and say, okay, it's almost time for dinner. And nobody's there. So I walk around the wall, the island, thinking, okay, they're hiding behind the island. That's how sure I was of it. That's how strong I saw it coming. I walk all the way around the island. I look all throughout. Nothing. I go downstairs. The girls are in the basement. There's no way they could have got down there that fast without me seeing them. This has happened several times. I've seen the same. I think it's the same girl. Katie and I were in her room, and this is out of the corner of the eye. We were in Katie's room. There's a stairway that comes down and around to the basement, down to her room, and then around to the basement in the hallway. The door's open. We're both standing in the room talking, doing something with laundry. And this person comes running down the stairs. You could feel the air go into Katie's room, run around and ran all the way around down to the basement. You could hear the footsteps. And we saw it out of the corner of our eyes. So we both go walking downstairs. No, Faith, you're not playing video games now. It's time for dinner. Talking to her sister. We both were so sure it was her sister. There's nothing down there. So we go looking for Faith. I have a 4-level house. She's on the top level of the house in my room on the computer and had been there for a while. She would have had to go run past us to go up these 3 flights of stairs to get up to my room. We both saw that. One time I was sitting on the patio table shortly after my black cat Mikey that I was talking about earlier had died. And I look, it's at night. This is the freaky part. I just look down at the ground beside me. And you know the inside of a cat, like a black cat's ear or a cat's ear where there's not much hair? And have you ever looked inside the ear and just in front of it where the hair parts? That's what I saw. I saw a black cat's ear and the inside of it where the hair parts and like the side of the face. And I jump. I was like, okay, there's an animal sitting next to me. And I knew that ear. You know, I've had that cat for 13 years. I looked down. And I've seen my dog that passed away. I've seen a couple legs walking by. And when I saw the legs, my daughter looked at me and said, "You just saw Daddy." And the interesting thing about the legs passing by, we were outside, and I was telling the kids it was time to come in. This is out the corner of my eye. I see 2 legs, jeans, or that kind of material, but it was brown, like a sepia photo, like an old-fashioned photo. And when it was like 1-2 steps, and when they moved, it looked like they moved through some kind of water, like they were in water. Yeah. So like this disturbance. That was the most interesting sighting. So there's a lot of things that you can see around your home. It's not always something you have to be afraid of, because all of the things that I mentioned turned out to be just loved ones, guides, spirits, animals, those that love you, just watching out for you and hanging around. And they're there because they want to be and not because they have to be.
Yeah, that's true. It's, and one thing, we're getting near the end of the show, but one thing I'll throw out there, how people can use this ability, this, peripheral vision. One time I was on a radio show, and a caller called in and asked, "What advice can I give that will help somebody, what's the best advice I could give, in other words, to someone who wants to get into ghost hunting?" And I told them the technique that was taught to me. It's a Toltec technique that's, like 5 centuries old. And it uses that vision. And when you go into a house, this is what I tell everybody, and that investigates, or if you think you see something, squint your eyes down, go snake eyes and make them real thin and just stare straight ahead. Don't look at anything. Don't focus on anything. You kind of cross your eyes a little bit, to take the sharpness off, and then look in your peripheral vision. If there's any spirits, if there's anything, any paranormal anomalies taking place, you'll see them in that vision. If you're going to see them at all, you'll see them in that vision. If you're looking around the room with the flashlight and stuff, you're not going to see anything. You want to sit there, soften your vision by blurring it, squint your eyes so that you're just looking with peripheral vision and look straight ahead without looking at anything.
Yeah.
And that's what I, it looks kind of funny, but I sometimes walk through houses to investigate them cross-eyed.
Yeah. And that would be shutting down your first attention and letting your second attention take over.
And what I was going to say something about that too, because that was interesting what you got in your meditation, because in Toltec shamanism, the first attention is the term used, and it's our attention that we have every day. And the second attention is the attention that where we have to take our first attention and push it away and look with our second attention. So those are terms that have been used for a long time in the shamanistic world.
Oh, I had no idea. That's awesome. Yeah. That's good confirmation.
Yeah.
And we are out of time for this week. Please visit us at our Facebook page, Beacon of Light. Go to our website, beaconoflightradio.org. If you would like a reading from me, you can get one there. And we will be posting meditations on our Facebook page and on our group on Facebook, Beacon of Light. You can ask to join. Thank you so much for being with us this week on Beacon of Light. And we will see you next week, same time, same place. Good night, Marcus.
Good night, Jennifer. Thank you for joining us this week, and remember to tune in to Beacon of Light as we explore new topics every Monday at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the Jackalope Radio Network.